This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This podcast is brought to you by Sales Fuel Hire, a platform to help companies hire smarter and flag 13 toxic employee types. Measure job fit, sales tendencies and motivators, decision-making abilities, and empathy levels, and make your next hire your best hire. Try it now on salesfuel.com/hire and use promo code MANAGESMARTER for $50 off your first purchase.
Welcome to the Manage Smarter podcast with hosts C. Lee Smith and Audrey Strong. We're glad you're here for discussions on new ways to manage smarter, hire, develop and retain talent, improve results and propel team performance to new heights. This is the Manage Smarter podcast.
Well, you know, Lee, it's not often that you have both an Olympic rower and an Equus coach on the same show, and that's today. What do you think?
It's amazing, and one of them though was a marriage counselor at one point. And I think that what's interesting about the two is like, I think the similarities are between the rower and the former marriage counselor is that you know, for relationships to work, you have to have both people have to have both well people have to have both feet in the boat. They got to be rowing the boat, and they have to be rowing the boat in sync. And if none of those three things happen or whatever, it's chaos. So it's like, or there's conflict. And I think that's what we're going to talk about today, right?
Absolutely. Welcome to Manage Smarter, everyone. I'm Audrey Strong. I'm the Vice President of Communications here at Sales Fuel.
And I'm C. Lee Smith, the President and CEO of Sales Fuel.
All right. So Chris Marie Campbell and Susan Clark, welcome to the show. Ladies, how are you?
Great. This is Chris Marie. We're really excited to be here and love that introduction.
Yeah, that was a little chaotic, but we're good. We're in the boat. We're growing.
I loved you pulled it off there. You brought it around and made it make sense. Although I did see people standing up in a boat that was a little bit, and then I realized, oh, it still works for rowing really well.
Yeah. Well, let me tell our listeners a little bit about you two. This is so impressive. Chris Marie Campbell is the Olympic rower. Susan Clark, former marriage therapist and Equus coach. They are the authors of The Beauty of Conflict. I love that phrase. The beauty of conflict, everyone.
Not the pain of conflict, the beauty of conflict.
Yeah. Harnessing your team's competitive advantage and the beauty of conflict for couples. So two different versions, two different audiences, but you might find both of them massively informative. I think so. They also have their own podcast with the same name, The Beauty of Conflict for Dealing with Conflict at Work and at Home. As partners in work and life for over two decades, they've adapted their proven step-by-step process home, working with Fortune 100 companies. Johnson & Johnson has had these two come in, Microsoft, just little companies.
The San Francisco PNC. Giants, that's going to be interesting to talk about.
Yeah, a little Moneyball action. And helping long-term couples and also workplaces really use conflict as a catalyst to greater intimacy, passion, and fulfillment, and teamwork, right, guys? So welcome to the show. I can't thank you enough for showing up.
Absolutely. And I love, Lee, when you were saying it's not the fun of conflict. We didn't call it the joy of conflict. We did call it beauty because that has richness in it and depth. And so often we didn't learn how to deal with conflict, so we tend to avoid it, manage it, diffuse it, anything. Let me get rid of this.
Well, that's where I was going to start, actually, because a lot of managers that I know are actually conflict avoidant.
Right.
And, you know, I know others, of course, are aware that actually create conflict, but more there's more often the case where they avoid conflict. What's the danger of that?
Oh, well, often people think conflict is tough, but the worst thing that can happen is when it's avoided, because it really doesn't go away. It goes underground. And what one piece you don't know about me, this is Susan. And you know, my background also is I had four different cancers when I was in my 20s. It's really what propelled me to do this work. And the thing that happened for me with the cancer was that's really, I really came to understand the importance of letting the conflict surface and really getting right into it, because otherwise you don't get the brilliance of subject matter experts. You don't get the best of them. And you know, it has to get messy before it gets better. And that's often what we're trying to help teams and leaders understand is, you know, you want that stuff up and out and you want to be dealing with it, because if it doesn't, you're going to not get the best of your of the type of players you have on your team.
In fact, you're going to actually get more politics and gossip and, you know, turf wars. And if you're, if it's in a large enough company, then HR is really busy managing all these difficult personalities versus the leader. So when you're saying a leader is conflict adverse, we actually do leadership development to help leaders develop the capacity to hold for those differences and deal with that. Because you're, you know, most of us just are so uncomfortable in the midst of conflict.
Well, speaking of that, I'm just going to jump right into the uncomfortable part and ask this question. It's like, do men handle conflict differently than women handle conflict in general?
Well, I would say, you know, that if you had to kind of go with numbers, it may appear that way. Although I will say there are women leaders, men leaders, there's a difference between conflict and fighting. And sometimes men leaders kind of, we've worked in teams where someone says, oh yeah, we're really good. Really good with conflict. But when we've been in the room with them, they're just going with whoever's the loudest. And and that is not actually really dealing with conflict. And vice versa, when women hold back their opinions and don't say what they want to say, that's kind of, it's, you know, it's either silence or violence. And we think there needs to be something different. And that's what we actually think of as conflict.
And we've actually been working with, we have a long-term contract where we're working with a Fortune 100 company with a high-level woman who actually has a style that people seem as abrasive. And then we've been coaching a gentleman who is completely conflict avoidant. And so he's unwilling. So it can definitely go both ways.
Although I will say very rarely, there's a this is Susan, a Fast Company article that talks about how frequently the word abrasive is used for women leaders, never used for men on 360 feedback, which is interesting. Because that to me says something about how it's perceived when a woman shows up.
You think it's an expectations thing?
I think it's something we've gotten used to assuming women aren't, we interpret women as abrasive when they have a strong opinion. And that actually, I mean,
we may expect men to have a strong opinion and kind of go along with it because we're used to men leading and we follow in just our evolutionary process. And for women to actually take a strong stand and disagree may be more uncomfortable for many of us.
I would suspect the term asshole would show up more on 360 for men.
But, you know, interestingly enough, what they showed was, yes, it does show up. I don't know if asshole, but close, pretty close. But the thing that, the difference is that they actually see that as, okay, but we can work with that. Abrasive on a woman usually leads to her having difficulty in maintaining the job, which is one of the challenges. And that's not just because men are interpreting that way. Other women interpret it that way. So we have these biases. And I've even worked with men leaders who are much more relational and different in their tone, and they get criticized for not being
strong enough,
you know, assholes.
Yeah.
So it is, we're kind of missing something there in how we evaluate leadership, I think. You know?
Well, so we often talk about the you've heard us say on this show, like, is that the hill you really want to die on, or will you want to be right, or would you rather be,
happy?
I love that you guys coined the phrase, would you rather be right or relational?
Yes.
And that's the place you start from. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, and it's so, you know, we get the gold star in school by being right. So we're kind of conditioned. But when I can be relational, this is Chris Marie, I can actually bring people along and we wind up coming up with a solution that wasn't my idea. So my ego may not feel really great, but it's actually a better solution for the organization. It's usually more profitable. And if I hold on to my rightness, I really miss that opportunity.
I think sometimes for, you know, going back to men again, it's like, you know, for us, it's, you know, sometimes it's about winning. And it's like, you don't want to win the battle and lose the war.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so true. And I mean, I think it, you know, I don't know, Chris Marie should probably address this because this is Susan, but she actually, as an Olympian, really does get that difference in sport between being a champion and being a championship boat. And what you just talked about is the very thing that makes a difference there. And it's the same thing on teams.
It's true. Like in I was on the national team and we had a boat that wasn't supposed to medal. But we really got along, trusted each other, dealt with differences. And we came out of nowhere beating the Russians for the first time in 15 years, winning the silver medal. It was
wow.
awesome.
Yeah, I think I remember awesome. That one actually. It was exciting just to actually kind of see. It's like, oh yeah, they weren't supposed to win. Like, holy cow, look at that! It's like, yeah. It was great.
Was the intimacy? The word intimacy it struck me too in doing my show prep. That it is actually involved in the workplace relations as well, because you have to make yourself vulnerable. Because you say, like, if Lee and I were fighting or there was conflict, for him to actually ask me the question, why is this so important to you, requires me to be vulnerable and go to a different level of intimacy in terms of explaining why I'm so upset or why I take this position. That would feel uncomfortable to a lot of people.
Yes. I mean, we actually have this, our most recent thing next to, you know, would you rather be right or relational, is, you know, intimacy is the new vulnerability. Because okay. I know teams are so terrified of that word. You use it and people miss.
Well, they think it's about sex. And we've actually defined it as intimacy. So we break it down differently. Oh. So I'm intimacy. So I'm willing to look inside of me and reveal it to you. And that opening of the kimono, which is an old phrase in business, is another version of it.
And yet it's critical to the success of your leadership, as well as to the success of how well your team begins to build trust and stay aligned, even in tough times, you know? So,
I mean, that's where the horse is. Susan's the Equus coach, and people are probably like, what? What's an Equus coach?
What but is an Equus coach?
I actually looked it up there. And I read it. Yeah, I should have explained what it is. Go ahead.
That's all right. Go ahead, Susan.
So the thing about horses is they are like, well, one, they're herd animals by nature. And so they rely heavily. They have a much higher EQ than us. In other words, they are constantly reading the environment, and they pick up things like heart rate, respiratory rate, how you're breathing. And, you know, the work I do with horses, it's all on the ground. So
with a leader
and a leader would go into, say, a round pen or an arena. And their job is to develop a relationship with this horse who's at liberty. So the horse is moving around, and 9 times out of 10 leaders begin to interpret the horse based. They start projecting out, trying to deal with the horse versus
control it.
And the horse picks up whether that's congruent or not. So if they're nervous and they're just faking it, that horse, for them, it's like, whoa, you don't even know yourself. I don't trust you. Because what they're looking for is real embodiment, which frankly, people look for that too, but we've learned all these mechanisms not to give that kind of direct feedback. But horses will give you that direct feedback very quickly, and you know whether you're effective or not. And until you drop it, I've seen this over and over, until a leader really drops in and understands that they have to really be, their insides need to match their outsides, that horse isn't going to have much of anything to do with them. And so, that's why it's so effective.
Is that why the bucking bronco runs alone?
Well, I will tell you, just my own reason for the profoundness of this was that Chris Murray dragged me to a horse workshop. Now, I'm not a horse person by nature. I didn't grow up with them. And I am the type of person who hates it when I'm at a leadership program and somebody doesn't volunteer. So when they ask, you know, for someone who is willing to go out into this arena with this horse, I said, sure. As I came down, I started listening to this horse that was bucking around, whipping. I was like, there is, and inside I was like, there's no way in hell I'm going in there. But of course, like any good leader, I'm like, I'm going in. That's what I said. I walked out to the middle of this thing with this horse that was terrifying me. I didn't say any of that. I pretended like I knew what I was doing. You know, don't let them see you sweat. And the woman who was coaching me, she kept asking, she goes, how are you doing out there? And I'd be fine. I'm good. I know what I'm doing. I'm good. And finally, I was near tears and I looked at her and I just said, you know, I have no clue what I'm doing.
I'm not fine.
Exactly. Help. Honestly, I'm terrified. And she said, look at where the horse is. And everything had gone silent. And the horse, as soon as I had said that, had walked up and was right on my shoulder breathing in my, you know. Because all this, she said, this is the first time you've been congruent. Mm. And the horse, that's what the horse wants.
Wow.
And it was such a powerful thing. I was like, I got to figure this out, because this is what all leaders need to learn how to develop. And so I trained with her.
Because the horse in that position off her shoulder is saying, I trust you as my leader. Yeah. I have joined up with you.
Wow.
Yeah. And what that's is, what what we want people to do with us as leaders. Go ahead, Og.
Well, I was going to say, what is some of your clients, what happens when they get into that arena and they're lacking self-awareness of like kind of what they're throwing off?
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
Horse reacts and then they go, oh my God, why is the horse reacting this way?
Well, and that's what's so powerful about this type of learning is that the horse reacts by, you know, either bucking or walking away or, you know, not wanting anything to do with the person. And so that's immediate feedback. And so we get to coach the person in that moment to say, so what is really happening? And when they can kind of start to breathe, and we also do some things where they check in with their body. Most people aren't very connected to their bodies. And they start to try some different things and reveal what is happening. And they have that shift in the horse, just like Susan did. Then they get that nervous system learning. And that's more than cognitive learning, which is why this leadership development process we do with leaders is so powerful and teams. And so when they're back in the office, they have that felt sense of, wait a minute, I can be congruent here, and people start to notice and respond differently.
Yeah, it's like, why is this happening? Everybody loves me. So,
what are some of the conflicts that they have on a professional baseball team and how they deal with that?
Well, we weren't working with the players. We were working with the executive team.
Ooh.
And yeah, and that was kind of a bit exciting.
I have to tell you, though, the first time, this is Susan, Chris Marie went down to work with them. I couldn't come. And normally we go together. And even though she's the Olympian, she has no business in most other sports or no knowledge. And so when they brought out the...
they were all wearing their big rings. And and so we went for a drink afterwards. And Larry said, hey, you want to try on the rings? And so I put on their three rings. And I'm like, oh, the Super Bowl rings.
Oh, jeez. Oh.
Because, you know, Super Bowl is bigger to me. You know, I was just thinking that. And I'm like, oh, yeah. They were very kind to me.
It's the Super Bowl of baseball.
There you go.
World Series rings.
Yeah. That ballpark is one of Lee and I went to a game there.
One of our favorite ballparks.
And I grew up in Chicago, so Wrigley Field and Cubs are my...
And I grew up a Cincinnati fan, so it's like, you know, big red machine and all that. But it's like, I fell out of love of baseball after the Pete Rose fiasco. But it's like, I started going to... that ballpark out in San Francisco. It's like, yeah, it's like I take everybody with me and we go to the ballpark. It's like, I know I have my favorite seats, my favorite places to go. And,
it's great. We've had the privilege of going down there and working with various parts of their operations. And we always have this office on the field, like just up above. It's kind of cool.
They took us out to the mound and we got to stand on the mound. Wow. It was so cool.
That was super cool.
We
got a few minutes left. Thrive Inc. is the name of your company. So those of you that want to reach out to Susan and Chris Marie, that's how you can get a hold of them. What does it mean when you guys say, if you don't deal with conflict and embrace the beauty of it, then things go, what did you say, come out of you sideways? What does that mean, coming out of me sideways?
Well, that could be, it kind of goes underground. So if I don't feel like we can talk, I'm going to actually talk about you to somebody else. And that we actually call, it creates a toxic culture, and we call it cancer in the organization because it really starts to erode the trust and breaks down the relationships. And so I can also, to your face, I might be more passive aggressive, like, sure, I'll do that. And then I never follow through because our relationship is broken down because I don't feel like I can be honest to you. Mm-hmm. And so learning, teaching people how to actually speak up and also deal with helping them settle their nervous system. So because we were trained to deal with conflict before we got probably 5 feet tall, you know, as little kids. Mm-hmm. And those reactions are still inside of us. So we support people being more responsive and increasing their capacity to deal with differences.
Well, you've got that fight or flight mentality.
Exactly.
Because a lot of times in cultures, the person that's the loudest is feeling just as threatened as the person who is silent.
What do you mean by that?
and that person usually will never admit it. but it really is sort of helpful to begin to recognize and work with it differently than what we've ever been taught.
Yeah.
And so that's something we're...
And this is, you know, I was a conflict avoider from day one because I grew up with a scary dad. And so, but I have learned the value of hanging in. And when we work with groups and teams, to actually hear the different perspectives, they come up with amazing results that never would happen if it was just the leader speaking or the loudest member. So yeah. It's really powerful.
I was going to say that the quiet person as a television news reporter, when I did that for a living, that was the one we always, you get sent to the live shot for the serial killer down the street in my neighborhood, and you go to get your MOS, your man on the street interview. Mm-hmm. And what do they always say? I don't know. He's just such a quiet guy. I don't know what to say. The quiet ones are the ones you really got to look out for.
That's true. There's,
yeah.
I had one last question for you. It's like, what tip do you give most often to managers of teams as far as managing conflict? What would be the one takeaway that our listeners could take from this way and start using today to better manage conflict?
How about can we each give you one?
Absolutely.
Sure. Okay. So mine would be actually to, before you respond, reflect back what you're hearing. Because too often we jump and want to give our other opinion without actually slowing down and saying, so it sounds like what you're telling me is blah, blah, blah. Did I get it right? Tell me where I'm wrong. Like giving a lot of space, because that creates a lot. As adults, we don't need to get our way, but we do need to feel heard and considered. And that goes a long way for helping people feel heard and considered.
This is Susan. I think what I would say, I love that one, but I'm going to go with a slightly different one. And it's like, bring curiosity. Choose to be curious instead of right. And really see if you can understand the other person's position, because a lot of times there's something great to offer. And that curiosity comes when you're willing to really check it out. Check out your story, check out your assumptions. Don't just stay in assuming you already know.
Get no matter curious, how not smart furious.
Yeah. Yes, that's great. Oh, you're giving us some good lines.
Yeah, there you go.
That's the new what? Maybe add a second website. There you go.
I know.
That sounds like a book to me.
It does.
Yeah. Well, I thank you guys for coming, and everybody get the two books, get both of the books. Okay. The Beauty of Conflict, Harnessing Your Team's Competitive Advantage, and The Beauty of Conflict for Couples. If you would like to hire these two amazing ladies, thriveinc.com is the website. Can't thank you both enough for being on the show. This has been.
Oh, it's delightful. Yes. Thank you for having us. Yes. We really appreciate it. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on iTunes, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also get more great information at salesfuel.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.